Mykonos is known for its history, hedonistic parties and high prices. For decades, the Greek island's been considered an upmarket resort, enjoyed by the Jet Set, a popular LGBT retreat, and it can attract up to 15,000 cruise passengers a day. I've taken the four-hour flight from London to explore Greece's glitziest destination and find out why it's so special.
That's the magic of Mykonos.
Well, Mykonos' old town has a unique appearance. Everything is white. The boxy, flat-roofed buildings are the same shade as igloos. As I've wandered through the car-free lanes, I've been squinting in the glare from the midday Mediterranean sunlight. Even the cement between the marble paving slabs gleams white. The brightly painted doors and woodwork is the only splash of colour. It's incredible. And so is the narrowness of the lanes.
Now, the main street will be really, really tight, you know, when there's a lot of people around. But the streets inside Mykonos are basically empty. Because when people walk in there, they get lost, and most people stay on the main streets.
Some of the alleys are so constricted, I saw two people trying to choreograph their movements so they could pass each other. It does get congested when the cruise ship passengers flood in.
First of all, it's protection from the sun. And second, it was protection from the pirates, because before a lot of years in the islands, we had a lot of pirates.
The streets actually are completely confusing to you. Repeating is an element of the local architecture, so you get into a continuous déjà vu. You think you have seen that, but it's a completely different neighborhood. And that was in order to confuse the other intruders. Building your town so close to the sea would mean two things. Either you were a pirate or you had a good relationship with the pirates. But still, there would be some other pirates from other places that would come here unexpectedly. So you would try to protect your possessions. So you would do that by such a way, by confusing and creating a labyrinth-like image of the city. They wanted actually to block the wind. The wind here can be so strong sometimes and for so long that it really gets on your nerves. They made the winding streets so narrow that they would have just enough wind, let's say ventilation, but not as much as, for example, on the waterfront or in the area around the town.
Mykonos is known as the Island of the Wind, and the windmills are a beautiful sight. Their white stone towers are capped with peaked thatched roofs. Their circular sails are made of wooden battens. Five of these iconic structures stand on top of a hill overlooking the blue Aegean at the top of Little Venice Beach. Stelios' shop is next door.
The windmills were originally built in the 16th century, and they were rebuilt in the mid-17th century. They were grain mills. They produced flour for Greece and for a few other countries.
A few minutes' walk away is Little Venice, with its buildings' balconies jutting out over the water. This direct sea access made smuggling easier in the 18th century. Now you'll have to squeeze past artists' easels as they paint the pretty scene, and you might have to walk around the huge pelicans that happily wander in and out of the restaurants. Some stand higher than toddlers. Strolling around is slower before sunset, when the waterside bars become packed by visitors wanting the best view. Tour guide Antonis Pathitos will make sure you don't miss a thing.
And of course we get to see the most important monuments, the famous Little Venice, the iconic windmills, one of the most photographed churches called Paraportiani.
And the church is beautiful. Since the 15th century, four small churches have been combined into one. A fifth was added with a dome, a second floor chapel, that you access using exterior stone steps. The church's smooth, rounded shape and whiteness makes it look like a big meringue.
And of course in Mykonos we have more than 300 small churches. Every family has one church. For that reason, out of Mykonos, you can see a lot of churches.
Now, Mykonos is famous for its beaches. There are over 30, one for every taste and interest, whether you want to windsurf, play volleyball, or hang out with the hip crowd.
There are some beaches, nature beaches, without sunbeds, without umbrellas, more quiet, for example, Phokos, Myrsini, Alia.
Of course, Mykonos is famous for its nightlife, much of it out of doors.
There is bars in the town, there is beach bars everywhere around the island. There's places with famous, internationally famous DJs playing music. You have, for example, piano bars, you have lounge music places during sunset. There is high vibes places like discos and such. Remember that Mykonos is the island of the tolerance, when in the 1960s and 70s became a great tourist destination already. It had already had an experience into tourism since the late 19th century. The Mykonians were experienced into hosting people, so they just didn't mind what was your sexual preferences or how you were dressed.
Mykonos has dozens of small boutiques in the lanes, and you'll find some high-end designers too.
Ordinary shops like clothes shops and shoe shops remain open until 2 o'clock after midnight, so you can combine your shopping with your clubbing at the same moment.
It's more subtle and not as blingy as I had expected, which was a nice surprise. I went to meet local Irene Sirianu, who spends up to a month creating each of the mosaics she displays in her gallery.
This one is a marble, a black marble from Peloponnese. I love the stones, and here in Greece we have many different kinds. Marble, dolomite, limestones.
She says she finds using the stone therapeutic.
If you are angry, you cut the stones and you feel better.
Irene became interested in mosaics in her former job, guiding visitors around the archaeological ruins of an adjacent island. I caught the boat so I could see what had been uncovered at Delos for myself. What I saw exceeded my expectations. It was amazing. I'll tell you why next. Great Destinations Radio Show. This is the Great Destinations Radio Show. I'm on the island of Mykonos, 93 miles east of Athens. You'll recognise it if you watched Shirley Valentine. The movie was filmed here. Mykonos has been a popular destination for tourists since the 1920s, and it is beautiful.
Just watch the ocean. It's amazing. It's changing colors and moods and the humidity. Everything is different every day. You've got different clouds. It's a free show every day. It's lovely. I love this island.
The island enjoys up to 300 days of sunshine each year. But it wasn't the pleasant climate that kick-started tourism in Mykonos in the early 20th century. Visitors came to view the ancient civilization uncovered by archaeologists on Delos Island. I'm taking the 6-mile boat ride to visit. I've come with Antonis of DelosGuide.com.
They have unearthed only 1/4 of the place, so imagine how much more waits to come into light on an island entirely covered in architectural monuments, making this place the largest archaeological site of Europe. This is the largest archaeological site in the world on an island, a World Heritage Monument under the protection of UNESCO, and so important by means of archaeology, there is a specific science called deliology that studies only the findings of this island, and this is the reason for the tourist development of Mykonos.
Welcome, let's go.
As we stood alongside the small stone quay, an ancient city of abandoned buildings, white marble columns and pillars stretched at the barren hill in front up into the distance.
So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Antonis. I'm honored to have you here to show you around on one of the most important archaeological sites of Greece, Delos, that features a unique example of a whole ancient Greek city narrating a story full of money and glamour. And nobody could possibly imagine that an arid piece of rock like this would become a religious and a commercial center of great radiance for centuries.
Well, Delos has a great story, but it takes a great storyteller to bring a ruined town to life. Antonis had everybody's attention during the hour-long tour. Delos was said to be the birthplace of the gods Apollo and Artemis. And Apollo was worshipped here. When the temples were built, the pilgrims came, and the island ended up hosting major events.
And pilgrims from all the neighboring islands around the mainland of Greece and Asia Minor would come here and meet every 4 years to participate in a specific celebration called the Delian Games. Sort of Olympic Games, let's say, without steroids, though.
Antonis helped us imagine how Delos people lived. We saw the wide marketplace and the amphitheater. We peered inside the roofless shells of buildings. The thick granite and mica stone ceiling height walls are still standing, and he described how the high street would have looked, sounded, and smelt.
At the moment, you are looking at little shops and workshops. They come in different shapes and sizes. Retail and wholesale shops selling ceramics, aromatics, spices, works of art, some kind of fast food, dried fruits, snails and red sauce, escargot, lots of that over here.
We tried to guess each building's former use. He pointed out grooves scored into a marble slab. Those were knife marks, suggesting that the building was once a butcher's. There were clues, too, that a bank was based across the street.
And here, on the marble frame of the window, you may notice the holes for the metal barriers that were here for the security of the cashier.
Inscriptions on houses are also quite revealing.
On the facades of the very wealthy families' houses, we have found, again, symbols like this in relief, next to club-looking symbols like Hercules Club. The combination of a weapon next to a phallus was like a warning symbol against the potential burglar of those times. Like, don't even think of breaking into my house, as I have a slave inside who is not just going to break your living daylight out of you by means of the club, but also he's going to harm you.
At home, I often watch grand designs on TV to see how little details can enhance the quality of life. Delos's architects did the same, particularly in the homes of the wealthy.
90% of the wind is north, and gusts of wind through the atrium would get through this open space into this room, and with the help of circulation would take all the bad smells away. So everything was thoroughly studied before built.
The homes and businesses on Delos would have appeared very different to Mykonos's whitewashed buildings. Delos residents preferred pink and ochre colours. As we toured around, we looked at the advanced water and sewage system before Antonis explained that, at times, it would have stank.
You check those slabs, actually they're covering the sewer of the city. And just like it is right now, sometimes, of course, there would be gaps among these slabs, so all these fragrances were emitted from down there. Mm-hmm. All right. Certainly 30,000 people droppings into the sea here would not be the nicest thing to experience.
Delos was abandoned in the 6th century. That's why so much has been preserved. But there has been some looting of antiquities.
Not only of the European travellers of the Middle Ages, but also all the villagers of the neighbouring islands around who come here to search for marble antiquities and some gold and silver stuff, most of the time to sell them for a bucket of olive oil.
When you visit Delos, you can clearly see how the city was laid out. It's hard to imagine the amount of work in removing centuries of debris which shrouded this ancient civilization. It was unseen when the Victorian archaeologists arrived, and three quarters of the island has still not been cleared. Who knows what else will be uncovered? You can't come to Mykonos and not see Delos, and you need to book a trip at delosguide.com. Back on Mykonos, the sign outside Stelios Formelis's shop in the shadow of the windmills piqued my interest. It read, "Don't be a tourist." He explained it's to encourage visitors to seek authentic Greek cuisine.
If you go into a restaurant in Greece and the waiter comes up with the menus and you ask them, "What do you have?" And the waiter puts down the menus and says, "Take a look at the menu," that for me would be a semi-Greek restaurant. If you ask the waiter, "What do you have?" and the waiter says, "I have chicken with potatoes in the oven. I have stuffed peppers and tomatoes. I have meat braised in a red sauce with rice or spaghetti." That would be a real Greek restaurant. You know, the old taverna-style Greek restaurants.
Antonis arranges food walks around Mykonos town. One of the stops is the bakery that Chloe Papayanaou and her husband operate. I step down into the whitewashed stone cellar. It looked like a monastery or a castle kitchen.
It is have been established under the Venetians, down under, exactly down the windmills, so it was very convenient to supply the flour from the windmills immediately.
It was hidden away so bakers could lock themselves in if there was an invasion.
They were closing the doors and nobody could understand what's going on in here. So it was working incognito, somehow.
Chloe makes delicious phyllo pastry pies.
It's a mixture of herbs, local herbs, greenery, that is existed all over the island. So the Greek philosophy and wiseness on herbs are unique, as you know. So old ladies has got that as a tradition from mother to daughter to teach the value of the herbs. So according to that, in each pie, according to if it's meat or vegetable or cheese, they select the proper herb. So it can get lighter, easier to digest. So that's why they're not really heavy.
Michael was on holiday from Los Angeles and on his third visit to the bakery.
I just love that it's clearly like an artisanal practice and, you know, something that's been around since the 1400s. It's, you know, in America, we don't have anything that old. And so to be here and to, you know, obviously eat something that was made by a true professional is really an honor.
You can also taste a popular local drink.
Greek mountain tea, which I adopted in the bakery, and it's really going very well because people realize the benefits of the natural herbs and teas. They're not cultivated. It grows wild in the mountains of Greece, and only in the mountains of Greece.
So it's like a sort of a herb that you boil with water, is it?
Yes, but we don't boil it because it loses its qualities.
I was accommodated in the stylish Rachari Hotel. It's at the top of the town and offers stunning views over the harbour and the Aegean from your room and roof terrace. There's a lovely pool and the rooms are uncluttered with olive wood furnishings and features. The breakfast is excellent too, and it's good value for what you get. A shoulder season double with a spacious bathroom and terrace is around €120 a night. Single rooms from 88. You can book at rachari.com. I enjoyed Mykonos's charm and atmosphere. Visit in the quieter period, late April or the end of September onwards. Your money will go further and there'll be fewer people. BA fly the 3 hours 50 minutes direct from London City or Heathrow to Mykonos in the summer months. One-way fares from under £70 if you book ahead. EasyJet also fly from Luton, Manchester and Gatwick in the season for similar fares.